In thinking about what to talk about tonight, I thought that there is a good topic which relates to the parsha, which I imagine that we're all, you know, at least somewhat familiar with such a notion, but maybe we didn't think too much about it. One of the first exercises that I had when I got to yeshiva in Israel in Gush. So I attended a class which was given by Rabbi Menachem Liebtag, who's spoken here several times. And it was a class on Parsha. He teaches Parsha very differently than any way that I'd ever seen. And he said to the class, okay, guys, find in the Chumash where Abraham is thrown into the fiery furnace. I said, okay, that's great exercise. Of course I'll find it. I turned to the end of Parsha. No, beginning of Parsha, Lech Lecha. Not even thinking, like, I know that it's not there, but anyway, of course it's not there. But it's one of the first things which is taught certainly to kids in school. You know, Abraham, he figured out that there was God, and he was thrown into a fiery furnace, and he was saved. So, it's an interesting question. It's not in the Torah. Did it happen, or did it not happen? The Rabban has a lengthy commentary on it, in which he essentially makes the argument hinging on a phrase in the Torah where God says to Abraham, Anochi Hashem Asher Otseisicha Meir Kasdim, right? I took you out of Ur Kasdim, and making comparison between Asher Otseisicha Meir Kasdim to Asher Otseisicha Meir Tzitzrayim, that I took you out of land of Egypt, which God says in the Aseret Dibros and the Ten Commandments. So what does Asher Otseisicha mean? I took you out means I saved you. So if God saved the Jews when he took them out of Egypt, God saved Abraham when taking him out of Ur Kasdim. So that's your hint in the Torah to this idea. And Ramban has a very lengthy comment where he not only uses that, you know, that Chumash proof, but he uses evidence from antiquity, which was available at his time, to suggest that there's enough out there to say that such a story really happened. So when I was in Israel for my nephew's bar mitzvah, my father gave a mini shiur on this subject, and he had a very different approach, and it's that approach which I want to share with you tonight, and hopefully, because his thesis is that it's much more in the text than we could imagine. Okay, so I apologize that in the source material that I gave you, it's not put in order of the way that I'm going to present it, but hopefully in due time we'll follow. So the first thing which I would just want to draw to your attention is actually on page 3. The top of page 3 has Targum Yonatan ben Uzziel. So there you have it, the Aramaic and a Hebrew translation of it. And I'm not going to read most of these things inside, but in the longer pasuk there, pasuk Chavches, so there, it just describes how Nimrod threw Avram into the Kivshan Ha'esh. Nimrod threw Avram into the fiery furnace. I'm using the Hebrew side. This is a Hebrew translation of the Aramaic. Shelo avad lelilo v'lo yerushus la'esh l'sarfo. That because Avram did not worship Nimrod's God, and he did not have permission to kill him, v'kach nechalak libo shel haron le'mor ilu nitzach Nimrod yevach haroso. And he goes on to tell the story about what happened to Avram's brother, Haran, who disappears from the scene. The Torah tells us that Haran died al-Panei Terach Aviv, that he died in Terach's lifetime. And of course, we know that he's not on the scene shortly thereafter, because who accompanies Avram when he comes to the land of Canaan? Lot. And who is Lot? Haran's son. Why wouldn't he be sticking around his father? Because his father's gone. Who else is Haran's children? The wife of Nahor, Avram's brother, Milcah, and Yiska. And Yiska, many identify as being Sarah. And that is something which I'm not going to be going into now. So we have this idea that there is a Kivshan Ha'esh, a fiery furnace, to which Avram is thrown, and Avram survived. So when would this have happened and why? So go back to the first page. What we have here, what the Targum Yonatan tells us, is that Nimrod was the king at that time, and it basically became a battle between ideologies, two ideologies, ideology of Nimrod and the ideology of Avram. What's the ideology of Nimrod? So it's an interesting question, but the Torah does mention Nimrod when it gives us the generations of Noach through Shem, Cham, and Yafes, and that is on the top page, first page, the top of the page. You'll see that Cush Yelad is Nimrod, who echel lios gibor ba'aretz. That Nimrod is a gibor, a strong guy, who a yagibor tzayid lifnei Hashem. He is this hunter of sorts. Al Ken Ya American Imrod Gibor Tsai Hashem. Look at Rashi there. Immediately underneath it, Leo's Gibor. Lahamrid Kola Olam Al Kadosh Baruch Hu Batsas Dora Palaga. That who's Nimrod? Nimrod is a guy who wants to get everybody to rebel against God in the Dora Palaga. What's the Dora Palaga? It's the generation of the dispersion. What's the dispersion? There's another way that we describe it, folks. Say it again. Right, the Migdal Babel, the big tower, the tower Babel. So what is Rashi telling us? That Nimrod is the guy who's involved in the tower of Babel, and what were they doing? What was the reason to build the tower to the heavens? To fight against God. Okay, so that's the ideology that we're talking about. Nimrod to fight God, and Avram to call out in God's name. That's what Avram does at the beginning of our parsha. Okay, and so, and that's the next one, right? Gibor Tzayid, he uses the definition of Tzayid to hunt, that he would, the same way that we talk about Esav. Esav was also a Yodea Tzayid, that Esav would mess with Yitzchak's mind and confuse him into thinking that Esav was a Tzayid. Similarly, you would say, Tzad Datan Shabrios Befevu Matan Limrod B'Makom. He would essentially convince people that it was a good idea to rebel against God. Okay, so that's what we have. Now, what do we know about Abraham? We have this concept that the reason why Avram is chosen to go to the land of Canaan is because Avram hikir esboro. Hikir esboro means that he recognized God's existence. Now, at what age did Avram recognize God's existence? I'm going to put this question out there. Anybody, at what age did Avram recognize God's existence? Okay, 3. And what is that, Rabbi Kasavsky? That's one opinion. Okay, good. Anyone else know of another age that the Chazal say that Avram recognized God? Okay, there are a few. I don't know about that one specifically, but 52 is certainly one of them. 50, look at the very bottom of the page. You'll see 3 different sources which give you different options. The Gemara, Talmud Bavli, mentions Ben Gimel. I put them in bold so you can see them. That's the one on the right. The one in the middle of the Psikta says that Avram was 50. And the one on the left, Bracious Rabbah, says that Avram was 48. If you look in the middle of the page, you'll see a very lengthy comment of the Rambam. And look at the 6th line, again, which is in bold. He says that Avram was 40 at the time when he recognized God. Which one is it? Jury's out. Okay, we don't know how old Avram was when he recognized God. Okay, but there are different options, and I personally like the middle-age crisis idea more than the 3-year-old idea. So 40, 48, 50, 52. I didn't give you the 52 one, but that is a legitimate one out there, that Avram is just trying to come to figure things out, and this is what he comes to. So what do we have so far? We know that Nimrod is a king. We have Rashi telling us that he's a king in the time of the Dora Palaga, the time of the Tower of Babel. Okay, what else do we know about the Dora Palaga? So take the Tower of Babel. Take a look at the middle box on the top of the page. That when it gives us the generations of Shem, it tells us that Arpachshad, that's Shem's son, he had a son named Shelach, and Shelach had a son named Aver. Aver had 2 sons. One's name was Peleg. Why? It says, Kibi Amav Niflagah Aretz. I put that in bold in the middle of the box on the top of the page. Kibi Amav Niflagah Aretz, because in his time, the land split up. B'shem Achiv Yoktan. Okay, so what do we get? We have that in Peleg's time, Aver had some kind of prophecy or some kind of Ruach HaKodesh, some divine spirit saying that this king is going to be alive in the time when there's going to be some big event. And what's that big event? The Tower of Babel. Okay, and he's going to be around. Now, what else do we know about the Tower of Babel? There are some hints in the text. Take a look at the box at the top left. This is some of the psukim in that time. And what does it say? That the people at that time spoke one language, and they found a valley, Pasuk Bey, is Be'eretz. Look at the word that's in bold. Shinar. Okay, in the land of Shinar. And look at Pasuk, and it explains how they go ahead to build a city. Pasuk Gimel, we're going to make bricks, and we're going to burn things in order to create these bricks. Rashi, I believe, explains that the reason why they had to do that was because they're in a valley, and there weren't stones, so they had to create bricks, and they build. Pasuk Ches, Vayifetz Hashem, and so after God decides to disperse them, God spreads them across. They stop building the city. Bavel, and so they're called Bavel. So what do we have? Shinar equals Bavel. We know where Bavel is. Bavel is Babylonia. Where is that? That's Iraq area. Okay, there's a valley there. I've never been there. It's a nice place, I suppose. There's the Euphrates River that goes through that town, and or that neck of the woods. And this is what Nimrod is ruling over. Shinar, Bavel, and that's what we saw in Pasuk Yud. Back in the box on the right. Okay, so we know who Nimrod is. He's in Bavel, and Bavel is in Shinar. Okay? Those are the first hints which we have. Now, we need to look at... I'm sorry, there's one more thing that I want you to see. Take a look at Pasuk Yud Aleph in that top right box. Min ha'aretz ahi yatza Ashur, that from that land, what emerged, essentially, Ashur. Now, we translate Ashur as Assyria, but what we understand from here is that a place called Ashur was built on account of what happened from here. In other words, there was a Bavel Shinar place, and something that happened there, which we only find out about later, is the source for Ashur coming about. Okay, so we have this idea that Peleg is going to be around in the time of the Dor HaPlaga. When does the Dor HaPlaga, when does the Tower of Babel take place? So we don't know exactly, but through some of the hints which we have, we can certainly make a few clear, we can extract some information. Take a look at the chart on the top of page 2. Okay, the Torah, in the end of Parshas Noach, tells us, starting with Noach, that in other words, it's after the flood, so it's in chapter 11, right after the Dor HaPlaga, right after the Tower of Babel story. It tells us that Noah lived 500 years, and then he had his kids, Shem, Ham, and Yafes. And then it tells us after the birth of his kids, he lived another number of years, and that's the story. And then that's the format that the Torah follows with all of them. Shem lived for 100 years, and then he had Arpachshad, and then he lived for another 500 years. Arpachshad lived for 35 years, and you see the numbers are dwindling significantly at this point. Fine, and we get to Aver. Look at Aver. Aver lives 34 years, and he has Peleg. He lives for another 430 years. Peleg lives for 30 years, and then he has Reu, and then he lives for an additional 209 years after that. Now, if you go through, add up the years from the time that Peleg has a child, okay? And what do you have? You add 32, 30, 29, and 70. What does that equal? I did the math for you. It's on the page there. Anybody? 161. Okay, so in other words, from the time that Peleg had a child, there are 161 years pass until Avraham is born. So that means that, is Peleg alive when Avraham is born? Yes. Yes, because Peleg, after the birth of Reu, Peleg lives for another 209 years. So Peleg, 161 years have passed from the time that Peleg has Reu until the time that Abraham is born. From the time that Abraham is born until Peleg dies, okay, it's 48 years. Ooh, that's a significant number. We heard that number before. Well, that means that Abraham is 48 when Peleg dies. This is straight in the Chumash. Now we saw one of the opinions as to when Abraham discovered God is when Abraham was what age? 48. But even if Avram was 40, it doesn't matter, okay? Because you know the whole point is middle age. He was creating a revolution. How do I know he was creating a revolution? Go back to the Rambam that we looked at before. And I said before I'm not going to be going through all the sources, but the Ksav Yakabal on page 3 mentions some of these mathematical equations. You can look at them. There is I think there's a flaw in his math, but I'm not going to go into that now. Let's go back to the Rambam on page 1. The Rambam on page 1, so you have to look immediately after the part which is in bold, where it explains, so the Rambam said that Avram was 40, but doesn't, like I said before, it doesn't matter that if Avram is 40 or if he's 48, because of the way that the Rambam depicts what Avram was going through. He says, so again, it's on the sixth line right after the bold. What was Avram doing? When he recognized God, he started to write like the Chasam Sofer, right? He started to write tshuvas. Hey, folks, there's a God. He created the world. And he'd have debates with people. Your way is not true. And he would break idols. He says that there is no other God in the world. There's nothing worth your time to serve and to worship, etc. Only God. And it's worth destroying everything else. If I look at the end of that line, and so that's what Avram was doing. Look at the next line, middle of the line after the period. When Avram was really defeating people, all the debates, he's sweeping every single debate. Rambam says, when Avram was defeating everybody with his proofs and with his ideas, The king wanted to kill Avram, and he was able miraculously to get out of there and to go to Haran. Where is Haran? West of Bavel. Has to be, because we know that Terach, at the end of Parshas Noach, was going to Canaan, and on the way to Canaan, he stops in Haran and he stays there. So if you stop in Haran and you stay there, that means that Haran is west of wherever you were before. So Ur Kasdim, some say that Ur Kasdim, Ur comes from the word fire, and fire means what was going on. In other words, what was the main focal point of the construction of the Tower of Bavel? What did Rashi say? It was a Kivshan Ha'esh. Did I show you that Rashi? I didn't show you that Rashi. Okay, so take a look at that Rashi. It's right underneath the numbers on page 2. Livenim, She'ein Avonim B'Bavel, Shibika. There are no stones there. It's a valley. That was Rashi. I don't know if I said that with somebody else before, but that's where it is. V'nisrefa l'sreifa. Rashi says, Kakos in Alavenim, Shikarin Toilish Bilaz. I don't know what that means, but Sorfim Osamakivshan. The way they make these bricks is with a furnace. So that's what Rashi says. And so what we have here is that Avram's theological debate against the world was taking place in the time of Nimrod, the time of the Dora Pelaga. Okay, and if you align the time to when Peleg is still alive, which is the let's say it's from Avram's ages 40 to 48, the way the Rambam presents it, at age 40, that's when Avram recognizes. But when does Avram win? Who knows? These debates could have been going on for years until it finally got back to the king. And what does the king decide to do? He decides to kill Avram. And what's the easiest way for him to kill Avram? Using the fiery furnace that he's using, right? There's a huge furnace that is clearly making a fire that people could see for miles around. And so what's he going to do? This is the source of his power and his strength. We make bricks here, and we throw in infidels. So Avram defeats that after however many years, and that's what the Rambam is essentially playing. And so what Avram does is he defeats not just in debate, but he defeats an ideology. Take a look at the Chizkuni on that page, where he talks about, again, it's on page 2, where he talks about how, as a result of the defeat of this concept of Bavel, what do you have? Look at the part in bold. Right, there's a big question you can ask. Why would God send a prophet? Who's that prophet to rebuke Nineveh? Yonah. Okay, we know that story. Why would God do that? Yoter mikol shara, more than any other place. Elabus chus Ashur. Ashur, it was because of Ashur. Where did Ashur come from? Shayet tzadik shebana Nineveh. Kedechsim mina aretz ahi yatsa Ashur. Perish mina eitz ahi yatsa Ashur. Shelo eskim ledor palaga. Ashur was built by people who abandoned the tower. They said, this is not our ideology. This is not our theology. We're going to go somewhere else. And what happens when Yonah comes to Nineveh? Yonah says, hey, folks, you forgot about God. And what do they say? You're right, we did. And they changed their ways. And so that city is saved because it was built by a righteous guy, the Chizkuni says. Okay, so what we have here is this image and this picture of Avram defeating Shinar. Bavel comes as a result. Bavel is negative. Ashur comes as a result. Ashur is positive. But what's the kicker? What's the kicker? There's a battle in the parsha we're going to be reading this week. What's that battle? It's a battle against two warring factions of armies. The five kings versus the four kings. Who are the five kings? They're the cities of Sodom. Sodom, Amorah, Admot, Tzvoyim, and Bela. Tzoar. Tzoar, the king of Bela. No, Bela. Bela. No, Bela and Tzoar is two names of the same place. That king's name is not identified. Okay? They're against four kings. Who are the four kings? Who are the four kings? You don't have to know them by heart. I think I gave it to you. Take a look at, the bottom of page 3. Okay, the bottom of page 3. Perek Yedalad. Perishis Perek Yedalad. Vayhi bimei Amraphel melech Shinar. Ooh, who's this guy? The first king that's mentioned, Amraphel. What's he the king of? Says Shinar. Anyone remember that word, that name? What's Shinar? That's that valley where they built the tower. The tower which became known as Bavel. Who's Amraphel? Take a look at Rashi. Amraphel. Who Nimrod? Amraphel's the same guy. What did he do? He says, okay, this whole Avram versus Nimrod thing didn't really work out for me. So what is he going to do? He's going to re-identify himself. He's going to change his name. And what did he do? Shamar la Avram poltoch l'toch kivshan ha'esh. He threw him into the fiery furnace. And if you look on after that, the next pasuk that describes them mentions Kedar LaOmer first. And the truth is that it seems from the text of the Chumash that Kedar LaOmer was the ringleader of these guys, and Amraphel was just one of the four. Okay? Take a look. Afal Pike Nitzchu Amuatim. Even though there were four who defeated the five, right? These four were stronger. That didn't prevent Avram from fighting against them. Why did these guys come and attack the five cities of Sodom? The Torah tells us, it's one of the questions I asked tonight between Minchah Ma'ariv, that their goal was not five cities and all the property. They could have attacked any five cities in their property. They attacked Sodom because there was one guy there that was a concern that would lure Avram out of his compound. Who was that guy? Lot. And why is this their goal? Why do they need to get Lot? Because there's a fellow who's pretty influential. His name is Amraphel. And who's Amraphel? He's the king of Shinar. And who's the king of Shinar, really? He's Nimrod. What's he trying to do? Years later, he says, you know what? I know what Avram did to me back in the day. I'm trying to get him back for what he did back in the time. When's the battle of Sodom? That's a fascinating question I'm not going to get into now. But the point is that all of these pieces that we have in this text about Peleg and the years showing how old Avram is at the time that Peleg dies, and the idea that Peleg is going to be named Peleg on account of something that's going to happen in the future, the idea of Shinar and Nimrod being the king of Shinar and Babel in contrast to Ashur, which is just, it's a fascinating little piece in that puzzle, and the one who emphasizes this in addition to Chizkuni that you have there is the Sephorno as well, who just talks about the conflict that you have between Babel and Ashur. All of these together, and of course the many comments of Rashi, paint this picture that there is much depth to the background scene of what's taking place in Avraham's life, and all of it together tends to lead us to the idea that a fight did take place, and that Avraham did have to leave on account of the reasons which we're familiar with, Ur Kasdim, to get out of there, to get as far as he could, to get to Haran, and to continue on his way until Canaan. Why? Because he needed to, again, have that conversation and to start trying to change an ideology which existed in the land of Canaan. How do we know that Avram wasn't as successful there? Avram brought the Nefesh Asher Asu B'Charan. How do we know Avram was not as successful there? Because years later, Avram has a son, and what happens when he wants to marry off that kid? He says, nobody from here. Sorry, I can't get somebody from here. I need to have a girl from at least a place where my influence actually had an impact. It didn't work here in the land of Canaan. And so, yes, Rivka's parents were idolaters, and her brother was an idolater, but what's Rivka? Not. And we see who Rivka is. So there's a lot to be read between the lines, but it's not that it's being made up. It's all hinted to in the text. And hopefully now we have a little bit more ammunition in case somebody says, where's the story of Avram in the Torah? I'm done. Where's the story of Avram in the Torah? The answer is, well, it's a 25-minute year. Okay.